I want to tell it like it is today about osteoporosis, about bones, because we're in a situation where every day, and I literally do mean every day in my practice, men and women are walking into my office and saying, I've been told I have osteoporosis. And, you know, it was especially interesting with a new client that I had just last week who said she had osteoporosis, but when I looked at her bone mineral density test, in fact, it wasn't osteoporosis. So how do you know if you have osteoporosis? Well, the gold standard is called the DEXA study, D-E-X-A, dual electron absorptiometry test. And that particular exam just requires that you lay on a table and a machine that looks kind of like an x-ray machine, but it isn't, takes a picture of your hip and takes a picture of your lumbar spine, those four vertebrae that are right there around your waistline, because those are two different kinds of bone. And so by measuring those two unique kinds of bone, we can determine the density of the bone. But you know what's really true, and what a lot of people don't understand, is that doesn't really measure the health of the bone. You know, when the bone densities come back low, that doesn't necessarily mean that the bones are in bad shape, because the only thing that those statistics are derived from is the density itself. But women who have small bones may have low bone density, not because of true osteoporosis, but because their bones have never been very dense. You know, a bird's bone isn't as dense as an elephant bone, but the bone is still strong enough for a bird. So when we look at the higher risk are petite people. The higher risk are people with smaller bones. But just because you have small bones, they may be light, but they may be fine. Low bone density is not necessarily a sign of a brittle bone. Since we only measure bone density and we don't measure strength or quality, they are really factors that determine whether a bone is apt to fracture. If bone quality is good, you can actually lose a quarter of your bone, 25% of your bone, and still resist fractures. This has been demonstrated in Japan, because they have 2.5 times less hip fractures than we have here in the United States, and yet their hip bone density is markedly lower. And we take all that calcium. And you're going to find out before this show is over that that may not be the best idea that ever happened. And it may not be the best idea because the bone isn't just made out of calcium. You know, we want to understand that we were meant to have these strong, healthy bones for a lifetime. And they are, in fact, living tissue. You know, we sort of get this picture when we look at that old dried out dog bone in the yard, or look at the skeleton hanging in the corner of the doctor's office, that that's what our skeleton looks like. But I'm here to tell you that's not true. You know, you take your bones for granted. I mean, most of us do. But this system is not just a coat hanger to hang your muscles and skin on. The skeletal system is part of other biological systems. It's a manufacturing plant. It manufactures a good bit of your blood material. So when we begin to look at the anatomy of a human bone, we first can admire the children that, you know, rough and tumble and fall out of trees and do all sorts of things. In the first few years of life, bones are not the hardened structures we usually think of. They're composed of a real rubbery substance called cartilage, which is very flexible and resistant to breaking. And then as the skeleton system ages, the cartilage is gradually converted into bone. That's ossification. By the late teen years, we've converted cartilage bone to bone bone, everywhere except our ears, where the cartilage remains cartilage. So even though the bone hardens over time, it never really becomes a solid mass of minerals. The hard bone, the outer covering that makes up about 80% of the skeletal system, is one part of the structural components. And then the inside, or the spongy bone, the second structural component, helps our body compensate for the rigidity of the hard bone. The spongy bone, or the soft bone, the internal framework of the bone, has some give to it, so that, you know, when we jump up and down, that soft bone absorbs the shock. But when we realize that bone is dynamic tissue, you know, I ask people sometimes in my practice, how old is your skeleton? And they say, well, I guess it was formed when I was 20 years old. And so I'm 60 now, so my skeleton's 40 years old. Uh-uh, honey. No. You don't have hardly a cell in your entire spine that was there last New Year's Eve. You know, the unique feature of bone is its ability to constantly reform itself. And that reforming that happens starts out with the matrix. And no, we're not talking science fiction here. What we're talking about is the microscopic anatomy of the bone. You know, if we have this structure, and this structure is foundationally made out of protein. Collagen is the most abundant protein that's in the body. And it's found in cartilage and ligaments and tendons and bones and your skin and even your hair and your fingernails. Collagen gets incorporated into connective tissue, so it provides resistance while we flex to all the tearing and pulling and all the terrible things that we do to our body. So in order for us to make collagen, we have to have protein. And this is one of the reasons that I complain when I see the raw foodists and a lot of the vegans who cannot possibly get enough protein long term with their diet. And as a result, their collagen quality starts to fail. And so if you don't have that matrix, and I often liken it to taking a crinoline off of a prom dress and jamming it in a paper towel tube. So if you could imagine that crinoline jammed into a paper towel tube, you'd see that matrix. You'd see that cross-hatching of collagen material, because you've got to have that collagen material in order to have a place for the minerals to hook on. You know, you don't just pour calcium into a bone and it fills from the bottom up. The minerals of calcium and phosphorus mix together into a compound called hydroxyapatite. And that is the substance that forms the critical building block of the bone. And that's the reason that I recommend MCHC, microcrystalline hydroxyapatite complex. Yeah, easy for me to say, MCHC. No, it's not MC Hammer. MCHC, micro, tiny, crystalline structure, hydroxyapatite compound. So hydroxyapatite is a compound that's made up of calcium and phosphorus together. Without collagen, the hydroxyapatite and other minerals like boron and silicon can't combine to form bone. We've got to get the hydroxyapatite to stick to the bone, and collagen is the way that we do that. Otherwise, you're hanging wallpaper without any glue. Collagen is the mortar that binds the minerals together to form bone. It's like building a brick wall. You take the cement that's composed of collagen and these other compounds called glycoproteins and proteoglycans. These are these special protein molecules that help us to make the glue that builds the bone. Then we put in a layer of hydroxyapatite, the bricks that cover the layer of cement, and then another layer of cement, and then another layer of bricks. You know how it goes to build a brick wall. This process is called mineralization. And it occurs not only in the initial stages of building bone, but throughout life. And as long as we're talking about the initial stages of building bone, we have to talk about the third trimester of pregnancy, because I know that there's a lot of holistic moms out there who listen to the fabulous show, Maternally Yours, right here on WSLR. And they know that as pregnancy ensues, their progesterone levels go up. And so by the third trimester, we're cranking out huge amounts of that hormone progesterone that we normally only make in the second half of a menstrual cycle, what's called the luteal phase, from the time the egg is released until the time of the flow. Well, progesterone, listen to the word, progesterone. So it's progestation. Progestation. You know, why do we crank up the progesterone in the last third of the pregnancy? It's because that's when the baby is forming the bones. 80% of the bone mass that occurs in an infant happened in that last 90 days. But let's go back to this bone metabolism. You know, the matrix of the bone is that foundation. And if you don't have enough protein, especially the amino acid glycine, oh boy, your bones love glycine, because glycine is a preeminent amino acid that's in your bones. And so when I recommend magnesium as an example for people to take, I recommend magnesium glycinate. So you hear in the name that magnesium and glycine are hooked together, because your body loves to absorb glycine. So it sucks up all the glycine, it just drags the magnesium with it. And that way magnesium doesn't act as a laxative. But what happens in bone metabolism is this construction and demolition crews really work side by side. When we're really young, the bone builders go to work and the bone destroyers are sitting on the sidelines with a cup of coffee. And then by the time that we get between 25 and 35 years old, we have about the same amount of builders as we have destroyers. But after age 35, it isn't just after menopause, and it isn't just in women. We end up with more destroyers, I call them cleavers, than we do builders. And the reason I call them cleavers is those two cells are called osteoclasts, the cleavers, and osteoblasts, the builders. Some people call them bone breakers and bone makers, but I like cleavers and builders. And so why would cells keep breaking down and get rebuilt? Well, remember, the bone isn't static. It's an ever-changing system, just like the rest of your body. You know, look at your skin right now. The skin that you're looking at right now is not the same skin you had on Labor Day. All that skin is gone. It's gone down the drain in the shower. It's stuck to your sheets. It's inside your clothes. You trickled it off as you were walking down the sidewalk. Well, the same thing has happened to the bone, but it's happening inside. And so these osteoclasts, the cleavers, the bone breakers, they dismantle the mineral and protein layers in a process called resorption. And resorption happens, and that resorption triggers the process for the osteoblasts, the bone builders, to start laying down that collagen essential glue that is necessary to secrete the protein, to create the matrix, so that the minerals can hook onto it. So literally, every hour of every day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year, your bone is coming apart and being rebuilt and coming apart and being rebuilt. It's really a very remarkable process. But bones are also connected to the immune system. That's why we know that osteoporosis is in part an immune system issue. This is the reason that if your mother and your grandmother, your aunties, were the people that had osteoporosis, there's no question about the fact that it puts you at higher risk. So it isn't just a matter of the fact that if you're very petite, a female, 80% of osteoporosis is in females, that you're a tall, blonde woman with blue eyes. Well, if I look in a mirror, there's a tall, blonde woman with blue eyes looking back at me. And so even though I've got heavy bones, I've got a larger bone structure, what's true is that being light-haired, being light-eyed, and being tall has a higher risk. But when we look at history, looking at a mother and a grandmother or a sister that have osteoporosis automatically says you need to pay attention. Anybody that's had a history of anorexia. I've been cured of the dreaded disease of anorexia. But those of you that have had an episode of anorexia at some point in your past, you put your bones at risk. There are certain medications that put your own bones at risk, especially the proton pump inhibitors that are taken to stop stomach acid, sedatives, antidepressants, any kind of cortisone drugs, long-term corticosteroids increase your fracture risk by double. And so when individuals like asthmatics who are taking long-term corticosteroids, or individuals who have rheumatoid arthritis or some other inflammatory disease are on long-term corticosteroid use, we have to pay a little bit more attention to their bones. But again, we want to see that immune status and bone health are closely connected. And so when we look at the osteoclasts, the ones that are the bone breakers or the bone cleavers, what we're looking at is the cells that are derived from the same bone marrow cells that make white blood cells. That's why individuals who have seemingly unrelated diseases like rheumatoid arthritis, lupus, diabetes, multiple sclerosis, hepatitis, depression, lymphoma, have osteoporosis in addition to their other symptoms. The very same thing that affected their white blood cells affected their bone destroyers. And you'd say, well, probably a good thing to stop the bone destroyers. But remember, if you don't destroy the old bone, you don't get the signal to make the new bone. So, yes, these functions are influenced by other things like hormones, estrogen, testosterone, thyroid hormone, insulin, and hormones produced by emotional stress. There is no question about the fact that when somebody has chronic stress, and all of us have some stress, but the issue is not how much stress we have, it's how we respond to it. You know, I'll never forget, I'll divert for this story. When I was living in Tallahassee in Florida State, and I was in the beauty shop, and Alice's on Monroe was the name of the salon. And the governor's wife came, and all the, you know, hoity-toity members of the Tallahassee Society came there. And I'm in there getting a haircut, and there's a glass wall in the front of the salon, and this lady pulled up, and she went over the bumper and crashed right into the glass wall. And fortunately, the car hooked up on the pavement and didn't go any further because there's probably 30 people in the salon at the time. And everybody was going oohing and on and making sure that the lady that was driving was okay and, you know, seeing to her. And they call the police and they call the tow trucks and they did all of that. And everybody was, oh, isn't that too bad? Oh, what a shame and blah, blah, blah. And the lady that was standing next to me said, oh, good, we're going to eat tonight. And I thought, what a peculiar response to somebody having a car wreck. And it turned out her company owned, her husband owned the tow company that pulled up to take the lady's car out of the salon. Well, you know, here was definitely a stress, but there was a very unique and different response to that stress by this gal. And that taught me a lot that day, that it was your perspective in terms of how you looked at an incident, not necessarily the incident itself. The most important thing that I want to talk about in terms of osteoporosis that it is largely a preventable disease. So even if you've already had a diagnosis of osteoporosis or osteopenia, I want you to know there is something you can do about it. When we look at this dual X-ray bone densiometry test, the DEXA test, painless, quick, safe, very low dose of radiation, we're going to get a measurement, and that measurement is going to tell you how much bone you have as compared to a 20 to 29-year-old woman. Well, when did you have the bones of a 20 to 29-year-old woman? Hello, when you were 20 to 29. So they've kind of weighted the test in such a way that virtually everybody who's age 50 ends up with osteopenia. Right. Seems a little goofy, doesn't it? That's because the World Health Organization made these statistics after receiving a grant from the pharmaceutical industries, because the pharmaceutical industries knew absolutely positively that if they came out with a recommendation and then tried to sell you a drug to treat osteoporosis, their motives just might be questioned. So six pharmaceutical companies got together and gave a grant to the World Health Organization and let the World Health Organization make the standards. You have to remember that these machines were not designed to test postmenopausal women. These machines were designed to test NASA astronauts that were shot into space, because they found out very quickly that when they put somebody in a no-gravity environment, that they lost bone. The same thing happens when people lay in the bed too long. You lay in the bed recovering from an injury, recovering from a surgery, recovering from a heartache, for that matter. You're losing bone mass just laying there. So when these machines started to be used to evaluate postmenopausal women, and a big surge of that happened between 20 and 25 years ago, then all of a sudden we ended up with all these women with a diagnosis, when in fact, just because you had a diagnosis, that didn't necessarily mean your risk was higher, because we're only measuring density, we're not measuring strength. Well, you know, there's a pill for every ill. And the pill for every ill is turned into 10 pills for every ill. You have osteoporosis, you can get Actinel or Fosamax or Boniva or Fortio or Myocalcin or Evista or Zomita or Reclast. I mean, there's lots of stuff that's out there. A new report just came out a couple of weeks ago that showed the increase in esophageal cancers that happen for individuals taking bisphosphonates. You know, there's only a modest improvement with a drug like Fosamax. When they gave this drug to women, the women that were on the Fosamax, 13.5% of them still had a fracture. 18% of the people on a placebo had a fracture. So that's an improvement. It's a one-third improvement, and I don't mean to minimize it, but we know darn good and well that there is no further improvement that happens as people continue to stay on this drug for longer than 3 to 5 years. There are clearly other things that can be done, and it's not just all about calcium. You know, when you think about the high fracture rate, the United States is in the group of countries that have the highest fracture rate in the world, and yet we're in the same group of countries that have the highest amount of calcium intake in the world. Japanese women have less than half of the calcium intake that we do, and yet have 2.5 times less hip fracture. So if you live in Norway or Sweden or Belgium or Switzerland or Slovakia or the Czech Republic or Austria, you're up with the U.S. and the U.K. in terms of a high fracture rate risk. But those are the same countries that eat the most calcium. So if eating the most calcium solved the problem, well, then that statistic wouldn't be real. And please understand, I don't minimize at all the drama of osteoporosis. You know, of the people that break a hip, 1 out of 7 of them never leave the hospital, and 2 out of 7 of them never live independently. You know, 12 to 20% of women who break a hip are dead within the first year, a lot of times from other conditions. And 90% of the hip fractures come from falls, but there are actually incidences where the hip breaks and that causes them to fall. That happens 10% of the time. There's no place that has a higher hip fracture in the world than the Scandinavian countries. And so there are people that have done a really lot of research on this. And one of the things that we found out right away here in the United States with the studies that were done in nursing homes is people who have high vitamin D don't fall as easily. How in the world would we ever learn that high vitamin D reduce falls? They did it with a compromised population, people that were already in a nursing home. So one of the first things you want to do to protect yourself against osteoporosis is get your vitamin D tested when you go to your doctor for your annual, or you go in for your pap smear, or you go in because you have a cold. Get a 2,5-OH vitamin D, 2,5-hydroxy vitamin D. The scale on the test says 30 to 100 is the range it should be, but think about how wide that range is. You know, the work of Michael Hollick, Dr. Hollick at Brown University, Dr. Hollick is going to become Dr. Vitamin D, just like Linus Pauling became Dr. Vitamin C. I think that's going to happen in my lifetime, because Hollick is the one that blew the whistle on the fact that just walking to your car in the beautiful Florida sunshine does not give you a sufficient amount of vitamin D. You know, we have to understand that vitamin D gets manufactured on the skin, and it gets manufactured by that evil molecule, cholesterol. No, it's not an evil molecule. It's necessary for life. It's necessary for health. Remember, the higher your cholesterol, the less risk you have of dementia. So when we look at that cholesterol that's on the surface of the skin, it gets irradiated by the sun, and then it turns into vitamin D. And that's why it's important that when you go out in the sun, that you allow your skin to absorb some of that sunlight, so that you can manufacture vitamin D, and that you don't take a shower as soon as you get done being out in the sun, because as soon as you jump in the shower, you wash off the cholesterol that's on the surface of your skin that's turning on into vitamin D before your body has a chance to reabsorb it. But if that range on the test is 30 to 100, then the mean in that test is 65, and that's the number we're targeting. We know that women who have a vitamin D level above 50 have half the rate of breast cancer of women who have a vitamin D level below 50. That's a pretty profound piece of information. It may be true for men with prostate cancer as well. I don't know. I've never seen a study about it. But since prostate tissue and breast tissue are so incredibly similar, I would expect that there would be a reduction. We know there's a reduction in colon cancer. So any of you who have had a parent who had colon cancer, you especially need to get your vitamin D tested. And sometimes we have to use 5 or 10,000 IUs. Remember, fat-soluble vitamins are measured in international units. They're not measured in milligrams. Water-soluble vitamins like B vitamins and vitamin C are measured in milligrams. But fat-soluble vitamins like vitamin D and vitamin E are measured in IUs, international units. So we often give 5,000 to 10,000 international units until we get somebody's level up in the, to that 65 to 80 zone. And then they may be able to maintain on 2,000 a day. Depends on how much sun they have. But, you know, I get clients that come into my practice, play tennis 3 times a week, go out and golf a couple times a week. They've got skin like a pocketbook. They've been out there in the sun so long, and we still test them, and their vitamin D is in the basement. And if you've got other risks, like a family history, like being on proton pump inhibitors, and you've probably heard many shows that I've done on No Nonsense Nutrition on the ultimate dangers of proton pump inhibitors when they're taken for longer than 8 to 16 weeks. If you're on sedatives, if you're on antidepressants, if you're on corticosteroids, then we have to be even more careful. There's a new tool. There's a tool on the web that's called FRAX, F-R-A-X, the Fracture Risk Assessment Tool, F-R-A-X. And you can go up on F-R-A-X and you can do the little self-test assessment that's on there to see what your risk of fracture is. But it really, even though we know 80% of osteoporosis happens in women, and even though we know for the most part it happens as we age, what's actually true is 2% of college-age women have osteoporotic bones. So I've seen 80-year-olds with the bones of a 30-year-old, but I've also seen 20-year-olds with the bones of an 80-year-old. What is going to increase your risk beside those drugs? No exercise, no movement, no place where you're stressing the bones. Every time you pick up something heavy, you are stressing the bone. If you have a high sodium diet, every time your kidney pees out that sodium, it gets rid of calcium at the same time. And if you have what the acid alkaline people would call acidosis, acidosis means you're eating too many foods that leave acid ash behind in the cell. It's not a matter of the fact that the food is acidic, like a tomato is acidic or an orange is acidic. What's true is those foods actually become alkaline inside your body. But if you eat too much grain or you eat too much protein and not enough fresh fruits and vegetables, then you can create a situation where you actually leach calcium out of the bones, very much like what happens when you drink dark-colored colas. We have seen that there was a European study that was done in 10 countries of osteoporosis relationship to dark-colored colas. And when we drink those dark-colored colas, they contain phosphoric acid. And phosphoric acid is what we call a non-reductible acid. You can't turn it into something else. And so that phosphoric acid, and it doesn't make any difference whether it's regular soda or diet soda or decaffeinated soda, they all have phosphoric acid if they're dark-colored, and most of the root beers do, but not all. Look on the label to find out if phosphoric acid is there, but they're really rough on your bones, you know, and a lot of people that are cola heads are drinking a couple of them a day. I mean, average consumption of soda pop in this country is 2 cans per person per day, 700 cans a year. So if you're not drinking 2 cans and I'm not drinking 2 cans and somebody's drinking 6 cans, and they're the person that's likely to get osteoporosis. So if your mother was diagnosed with osteoporosis or had a hip fracture or other osteoporotic fracture, if you're fair-skinned, if you're blue-eyed, if you're either quite thin or quite tall, if you have a really slight build and you have less than 18% body fat, if you smoke, if you spend most of your time indoors, if you don't spend much time on your feet, I mean, 4 hours a day on your feet is one of the things that can help to protect you against loss. If you were at one point a fitness fanatic, I can remember a client that came to me and she was really upset because she couldn't do the fifth class of the day. She was truly a fitness fanatic. Whether she was dieting for weight loss or just getting a buzz out of strenuous exercise like marathon training, we have clearly seen that chronic overexercise, especially with inadequate caloric and mineral intake, can result in stress fractures, whether it's a ballet dancer, a soccer player, or a competitive runner. You know, if you're somebody whose period stopped at one point, whether it was because of anorexia or because of some other treatment condition, whether it was because of excessive exercise, if you drink too much, you know, what's too much? Really, women should stop at one drink a day. And no, you don't get to save up and have three on Friday and four on Saturday. You know, there's about 10 grams of alcohol in 4 ounces of wine, in 12 ounces of beer, and an ounce and a half of 80 proof liquor. And by the time that you've had two of those servings, and certainly at the point that you get to the third one, you're drinking more than 25 grams of alcohol in a day, and as a result, you're going to lose bone. When we look at the relationship of depression, they have shown that depression is an independent risk factor for osteoporosis. Well, I don't know that it's the depression. I think it's the whole overall body health, because what I see in more than half of the conditions of depression is it's the overall body health. You improve the overall body health, depression goes away. Again, anybody that's using anticonvulsant medication, using steroid drugs, why do I keep repeating these? PPIs, use proton pump inhibitors, because I want you to realize that there may be something else you can do. If you've had a thyroid disorder, specifically hyperthyroid, not hypo, not too little, but excess thyroid, you know, that can be triggered on by something as simple as a spider bite, can cause you to have excess thyroid. All of those things can put your bones at risk. So what are you going to do? What's a girl to do? Well, what's a guy to do? Because we don't want to leave men out of this equation. Men get osteoporosis too, and that was one of the demonstrations that it wasn't all estrogen run. Men may get osteoporosis 10 years after women do, 10 years later than women do. But, you know, if a guy's got celiac disease or Crohn's disease or any other kind of chronic condition of the bowel, he's the first guy that you want to test. Because if you've got a chronic bowel problem, you probably got a chronic bone problem at the same time. So what are we going to do? Well, first off, we're going to take microcrystalline hydroxyapatite concentrates. This highly absorbable natural calcium source that most often comes from New Zealand lamb bone or New Zealand veal bone. And why do we pick New Zealand? Because they don't allow the animals to be given antibiotics and hormones, and they don't have any radiation in their island, in their island nation. Right. If you want to get radioactive treatments, you got to fly 2 hours to Sydney to get it. They don't have any radioactive materials in New Zealand. So MCHC, if it's processed correctly at 30 degrees below zero, they have a big lambing industry in New Zealand, so they got a lot of lamb bones left over. And so they make a comprehensive bone food. You know, calcium is a mineral that's involved in lots of different functions in the body, including muscle contraction. If you get a calcium reading in your blood and you go, oh, my calcium is normal, that's only 1% of your calcium. So MCHC contains calcium, but calcium is only one ingredient of what I call bone soup. And bone soup simply talks about the fact that we need to be taking a complete bone food. And if you're, you know, sucking down Tums, which is calcium carbonate, you know, calcium carbonate is chalk. Eating a box of chalk is not going to make your bones stronger. What happens when you're taking carbonate, it's the cheapest form of calcium, and it has an antacid effect. And remember, the acid in your stomach is there for a reason. It's there to essentially sterilize your food, to get the bugs off of it. It's not just there to digest, but what it does digest is protein. It doesn't work on carbohydrates. Stomach acid doesn't digest an apple or a piece of toast. It works on the salmon and the chicken and the egg you had for breakfast. So when you take calcium carbonate, you have an antacid effect, so it interferes with digestion. It causes gas, but it's cheap. And so a lot of people have moved to calcium citrate, which is well absorbed. But it's still not a complete bone food. At least it doesn't act as an antacid the way that calcium carbonate does. But with microcrystalline hydroxyapatite, what we have is not only a well-absorbed calcium source, but a comprehensive bone nourishment compound where all of the ingredients are there. There's phosphorus and zinc and magnesium and collagen protein. All of those things are present in MCHC. So calcium and supplements and in our diet are always associated with another substance, such as carbon in the form of calcium carbonate or citric acid in the form of calcium citrate, etc. So they'll tell you that you need 1,200 milligrams of, quote, elemental, close quote, calcium. Elemental calcium is the word that's often there. But you don't need 1,200 milligrams of elemental calcium when you're taking things like MCHC because they are better absorbed. 500 milligrams of elemental calcium from calcium carbonate will not provide the same health benefits as 500 milligrams of elemental calcium from MCHC. When we look at whole bone and realize only 20% of it is made out of calcium, the rest of it is made out of phosphorus and zinc and copper and protein and boron and vitamin K and vitamin D, etc. So, MCHC. That's the first thing. I want to look at vitamin D. First, you want to get a test, find out how much you really need. I don't find anybody who needs less than 2,000 IUs a day. I'm telling you the truth. I can't, you know, they say that the recommendation now is 600 IUs a day. Boy, I've done hundreds of these tests or read hundreds of these tests, and I have never found anybody who needs 600 IUs. I find people that need 2,000 to 5,000. But we also are looking more at vitamin K. And a lot of people know that synthetic vitamin K, vitamin K1, has to do with clotting. And so people that are on Coumadin or warfarin or Plavix or some other blood-thinning drug are often told not to eat foods like dark leafy greens that are so healthy for you because they're high in vitamin K. What they're not differentiating is the difference between K1, which is synthetic, and natural MK7, which is K2. When we look at the source of the vitamin K itself, vitamin K1 is derived from soybeans. It's derived from green leafy vegetables. But K2 is really of bacterial origin. It's derived from non-GMO soybeans that are fermented with a compound called natto. And they make natto. If you've ever used this culinary delight, if you're an Asian food fan, you might have had natto at some time, or natto, as some people pronounce it. And this is a fermented soybean. We use a bacillus bacteria, and it ferments this, and it's used like you'd use soy sauce or horseradish or Worcestershire sauce. Only I do have to say, from this very Caucasian taste palate that this blonde blue-eyed woman has, it was one of the single nastiest things I ever put in my mouth. But the good news is that it allows us to get these long side chains of vitamin K2. And healthy flora will manufacture vitamin K2 in the bowel. But if the intestinal absorption is insufficient, or if there's deficiencies in the low bowel in terms of the biome, in terms of the bacteria that's there, we may not have enough ability to manufacture vitamin K. So In addition to MCHC, we're looking at vitamin D and we're looking at vitamin K. And then we have to look at silicone. And no, I'm not talking about phony titties here. I'm talking about the fact that these minerals that occur in the ground, plants can do things to these minerals to get them to be absorbed. And so when the lettuce is growing, it's got bacteria at the end of its little rootlets, and it can then convert the sand that it's growing in into a compound that can be absorbed. And so when we have this silicone coming up in the plant, it's often attached to choline. And you've heard me talk about phosphatidylcholine on the show, that great fat that exists in egg yolks. And so what happens is we can actually activate silicone with the choline, choline-stabilized orthosilicic acid, yeah, easy for me to say, that provides the body with the materials that help to increase the integrity of the matrix. So no, it's not adding minerals that we're going to hook on, like the microcrystalline hydroxyapatite. It's not going to be part of the vitamin D or the part of the vitamin K. It's going to be this highly absorbable form of silicon that is part of the role of collagen development so that we have the matrix to hang the minerals on. You know, I have clients every once in a while ask me about strontium and strontium's effect on the bones, but I have to tell you the research is still very scant on strontium. But I will talk about the nature of exercise, because there's no question about the fact that exercise helps us to maintain the bone that we have. And so when we look at just doing, you know, 10 arm curls each side every day, you're going to see a difference in terms of how much bone we maintain in the arm, because the worst fracture that happens is the fracture right below the shoulder or the fracture of the wrist that happens when somebody falls. So the woeful shape of North American bones, and I say woeful because we're talking about a very significant amount of the population being affected, as we keep talking about ways that we can reduce healthcare costs. One of the ways that we can reduce healthcare costs pretty significantly is to have better bones, because the costs of caring for somebody who's broken a hip are very substantial. You know, by the time we get to 2020, now remember, that's 6 years from now, 40 million American women are going to be over 65. And somewhere between 20 and 30% of them will suffer from a hip fracture by the time they reach the age of 90. So we're talking about huge numbers and huge numbers of care costs. So when you're out there exercising, when you're walking, you're getting more loading than you are on a Stairmaster, an elliptical, or a bicycle. You're bearing your own weight when you're walking. So if we want to change the bone health crisis that's worsening every year, one of the first things we can do is do some exercise, stand up more during the day, put some load on that bone. When we do that, the skeletal structure can get healthier, and it can get healthier at any age. And so if you've received a diagnosis of osteopenia, and osteopenia means you're sort of kind of headed in that direction. Now, remember, you're going to get two sets of numbers. You're going to get one set of number from the lumbar vertebrae, and you're going to get one set of numbers from the hip. And generally speaking, this DEXA is ordered around a woman's 50th birthday. But if you have any of those risk factors we talked about, small in stature, small in bone, a mother or grandma that had osteoporosis, you're on these various drugs, then you need to start getting your DEXAs done in your 40s. Because I'm here to tell you, it's a heck of a lot easier to treat a bone with a little bit of loss than it is to treat a bone with a lot of loss. So osteopenia says your number is going to come from a minus 1 to a minus 2.5. And that means that you have lost bone mass from 10 to 25% of what it would have been expected at 20 to 29 years old. If you have a diagnosis of minus 2.5 or greater, then that is a diagnosis of osteoporosis. And sometimes women can have osteoporosis of the spine and not have it of the hip, or they can have it of the hip and not have it of the spine. Remember, cortical bone is different in the hip than it is in the vertebrae. The vertebrae are much more flexible, but a vertebral fracture, a stress fracture that happens in the vertebrae, is an incredibly painful episode. And most women who have a vertebral fracture will end up having another one within 3 to 5 years. So when we look at the health of the bone, we're looking at the health of the person overall. You know, when there's 10 million people in North America that have already been diagnosed with osteoporosis, we realize that this is truly a health crisis. So when you see the lady that's walking across the parking lot and she's literally bent in half because of the deterioration that's happened in her spine, when you see the individual that's moving forward, 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 because that spine can no longer maintain integrity and those muscles get weaker and weaker, let that be a motivator to you. Let that be a motivator to keep your erect posture, to keep yourself strong, to make sure you're eating calcium-rich foods, to make sure that you're not eating too much protein, and to pay attention to that list of drugs that I gave you that are hazards as far as osteoporosis is concerned. We have an opportunity to make a very big difference in the health of America, not just the health of American women, but the health of America, by finding better ways to prevent rather than treat osteoporosis. You know, we could say the same thing about a whole lot of conditions. If we stopped looking for a cure for cancer and started looking at early, spending more money on early investigation, and not just prevention, but also just the findings of cancer, the same thing is true with bones. If we would spend more time looking for the early signs that osteoporosis is happening and giving people an opportunity to change their diet and change their choices in their 30s and 40s when the bone loss begins, the bone loss doesn't begin at the menopause. You may lose 2 to 7% of your bone every year in the years, 5 years following menopause, but that bone loss starts at 35. If we did that, we wouldn't have to be searching for another drug, a drug that turns around and gives you digestive disorder and possibly creates esophageal cancer and blah, 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 blah. Why do we want to use a pill for every ill when there's something that we can do about it ahead of time? You know, every time I'm on the air, I feel like it's a huge responsibility to give you the very best information that I possibly can. And, you know, you want to listen to these shows again, you can always go up on Plus News, and that's /Podomatic, because dozens and dozens and dozens of the shows are there, and they're searchable. And when you go up on EvePlus.com, you can read some of the old columns that I've written. But the nature of this show, it'll be posted here pretty soon, and maybe it'll become a classic. Thanks for the idea, Susie. This is Eve Prang Plus. I'm a licensed nutrition counselor. I've been in practice here in Sarasota for 25 and a half years. And in addition to being a big, huge fan of every kind of nutrition, I'm also a big, huge fan of astronomy. And so a whole lot of you know that I'm a passionate amateur astronomer, and that's why you'll find me tonight out at Siesta Key Public Beach Pavilion doing Meet the Sky about observational astronomy. So if you want to join us, you'll be there right at dark. I'll probably be there about 6:45 and watch the sunset. And then we'll look in the sky and see what we can learn about Venus and the other things that are revealing themselves.